The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah!
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
All you do is dribble.
I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker. You chuck.
If it's happening in sports.
Fumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts.
Woo!
Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback. Evan Sharpley.
Glad to have you with us, Sean and Sharpley. The Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Welcome to another Friday. We're presented by Bud Light Seltzer, light and refreshing with four fruit flavors, just 100 calories, 2 grams of carbs, and less than a gram of sugar. It is Bud Light Seltzer. How are you today, Evan?
Pretty good. My hair keeps growing. It's getting a little out of control. I still haven't gotten to the point though where I've had my wife cut it for me. Maybe I'll come back with like a mohawk or something like that, but we'll see.
Does she know how to cut it if it came to that?
I think that she'd manage, but what I think it would probably turn into would be like, let's make dad look as silly as possible and have the 2-year-old right. Help too. So,
right. My wife did mine about a month ago. She wasn't too thrilled about it. I'm coming up on where I probably need it again. Unfortunately for mine, it's like, oh, you get out the buzz clippers, you put on an attachment, a couple different attachments. It's not too hard, but I'm coming up. Whether or not that's fortunate, I don't know, because Darren Pritchett and I were doing a Zoom meeting with Bill, our manager back at the station this morning, and his hair is a lot thicker than mine. and it looks like he is needing it more than mine. So I guess if you want to call my hair situation fortunate, I guess at least my wife can just get out the clippers. And like I told her the first time, because she was worried about making a mistake because she hadn't really done it in a long time. And I said, look, I'm not going to see anybody anyway. If you make a mistake, no harm, no foul. We just buzz it all the way, and no one's going to be able to see it. So we'll see what happens. I think I'm about due for my second one this weekend. So we've got a lot to get to. Not a lot of time, as always, in today's show. You'll hear from a lot of different people. Notre Dame baseball coach Link Jarrett. We had him on recently, and there was just something that came down from the NCAA regarding the one-time transfer rule. So we happened to ask Link Jarrett about that rule when we had him on Sports Beat recently. You'll hear from him on that. There's some controversy, of course, with last week's NFL draft. We'll have some thoughts about the Notre Dame players selected in the draft, including the most controversial comments on the Bears picking Cole Kmet. We've got some baseball proposals to look at. The Last Dance, Michael Jordan. We will do all that and more on today's show. Before any of that, though, I need to tell you about May Day for Michiana, which is today. It's a one-day fundraising event by Midwest Family of South Bend to assist the incredible needs during this time of uncertainty for the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Due to the many reasons during this COVID-19 outbreak, people are struggling. The demands on the Food Bank of Northern Indiana are as great as ever. So how can you help? Well, you can visit feedindiana.org and make a donation. A donation of $5 provides up to 20 meals, $10 provides up to 40 meals, and $25 provides up to 100 meals. So you can also, the next time you're shopping at a local Martin supermarket, pick up a few extra items and place them in the donation bin by the exit, or just visit WSBTradio.com for more information to help out those in need. So it is May Day Michiana today. Help out if you can. All right. Like I said, Evan, I've got a lot of different topics, and I threw this one by Darren Pritchett last night on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. And before we get into some of the other stuff, I wanted to throw this by you. You have seen the movie Miracle, I hope, right?
I have, yes.
Okay. So the movie Miracle, which of course chronicles the 1980 Miracle on Ice by the U.S. Olympic hockey team. Before I ask the question, I'm going to play you some audio. So this is Kurt Russell's speech as Herb Brooks from the movie Miracle. Let's take a listen to that first.
Great moments are born from great opportunity. And that's what you have here tonight, boys. That's what you've earned here tonight. One game. If we played them 10 times, they might win 9. But not this game. Not tonight. Tonight, we skate with them. Tonight, we stay with them. And we shut them down because we can. Tonight, we are the greatest hockey team in the world. You were born to be hockey players. Every one of you. And you were meant to be here tonight. This is your time. Their time is done. It's over. I'm sick and tired of hearing about what a great hockey team the Soviets have. Show them. This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
So again, that's Kurt Russell as Herb Brooks from the movie Miracle. And the reason I played that speech, that is, of course, is the speech from before the U.S. plays the Soviets in the 1980 Olympics. They knock off the Soviet Union. And the reason I've played that, Evan, is because retired Super Bowl champion Chris Long, former defensive lineman, just retired last year, he says that speech is horrible. I want to know if you buy or sell that as a horrible speech.
Well, I mean, Long's pretty opinionated guy, right?
You know, he's right.
He's pretty outspoken on nearly every topic if you follow his social media. I don't know. I'm gonna sell. I mean, I don't think it's one of the best speeches ever, but it's still a good pregame speech. I gotta think though, you know, it's probably a little bit different than maybe a football pregame speech.
Right.
I think it's hard to compare, but you know, you're kind of pulling on heartstrings a little bit on, you know, in that moment. And, I mean, I'm not going to chalk it up and say, man, that's a top five all time pregame sport, you know, sports speech. But to say it's horrible, I mean, come on.
Well, and his biggest thing, and he was doing an interview, and that's where I heard this. He was doing an interview in a podcast, and he was basically coming down on all sports movies. Like he thought the Miracle speech was horrible. He didn't like Hoosiers because he didn't like that speech either and all this stuff. And basically the only speech that he liked was from Any Given Sunday. And he,
well, that's because they're allowed to curse in that movie.
That's probably right. because this was a Disney movie, of course. You know, Miracle was made by Disney. So the closest thing that to a curse word in the entire movie was, and we kind of scrubbed it a little bit, where he uses the S word, S, the Soviets. You know, that's the closest thing there. You're probably right. But yeah, he just basically sounds like he's down on all sports movies because they're overdramatic.
He's calling for more R-rated sports movies.
Apparently so. So I don't know. I just thought it was interesting because I think most people who are sports movie fans, as far as sports movie speeches, I put the Miracle speech up at the top. And we don't have to get into how much actually happened and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, it's a sports movie. You know that Hollywood's gonna Hollywoodize stuff and play it up and everything. So,
well, hey, Herb's speech obviously worked, so it couldn't have been that bad.
There you go. All right. Speaking of Hollywood, how about The Last Dance? You've been watching it so far, right?
I have. Yeah, I've four episodes in right now.
Yeah, we're four episodes in. We've got episodes 5 and 6 coming up this Sunday and coming up tonight on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. We've got Dave Jude, who was part of the media throng toward the end of the Bulls' run. So it'll be interesting to get kind of some of his comments and takes on that. That'll be coming up at 5:30 tonight. But what do you think about what you've seen so far the last dance, Evan?
Well, first off, you know, I find it pretty interesting, you know, what this has turned into. I think outside of the actual documentary, and most of it certainly is occurring, you know, on social media and different sites, that it's turned into the Michael Jordan versus LeBron James debate again. And for me, you know, and my context is I'm a huge Jordan fan. I respect the greatness of LeBron too, and what he's done so consistently through his whole career. And so for me, it's kind of, you know, I feel like I'm fortunate to have watched MJ and Kobe and LeBron all play in my lifetime. You know, that's pretty rare to have, you know, so many guys of that caliber who are in the discussion as potentially the greatest player of all time. But I've been bummed that the discussion has been MJ LeBron related versus just enjoying the documentary. And that's that's been my approach, is I think it's just been so cool to kind of get, you know, lift the veil a little bit. You know, a lot of it was kind of, you know, smoke screen, and, you know, there are rumors and there's, you know, so many legendary stories, but now we're getting to see behind, you know, behind the closed doors a little bit more, and really how crazy this final season is.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening with the Bulls. You know, it still is amazing to me with all that was going on, knowing prior to the season starting that, you know, that management is saying this is the final, you're not coaching here next year. How would you, you know, you'd probably be like, all right, I'm peacing. We're leaving now.
And Phil Jackson was the handpicked guy back in the late 80s to take over for Doug Collins. And now it's like, you're gone and Jordan's gone and Pippen's gone. It's like, why? It could have lasted for at least a few more years. I agree on your take, though, with the LeBron James thing, because obviously it all started that first night when episodes 1 and 2 aired and you started seeing all this stuff. What does one have to do with the other? Why? Yeah. I mean, there was nothing that I saw watching that, and having lived the entire Michael Jordan era as well, there was nothing I saw that night that made me go, see, he's definitely better than LeBron James. I don't get it.
and to, you know, to the point too is, let's just wait till the next pandemic in 2040 and LeBron can have his own own documentary and we can talk about it.
That's right. As a Jordan fan, and you've talked about this before, that you were a Jordan fan, and of course growing up in Michigan and your dad was a Bad Boys Pistons fan, and a lot of this focused on that. And actually, I caught part of ESPN replayed the Bad Boys 30 for 30 last night, so I caught part of that before I went to bed and recorded the rest so I could watch it at some point. But it was kind of, they obviously did it because of the fact that this was going on. But just how much of this is really new to you, being a guy who was a Jordan fan, because you essentially were still kind of growing up at the tail end of this, essentially this 97-98 season.
Yeah, I was, but you know, I started kind of getting into collecting cards around that time, and then obviously, like you said, you know, with my dad being a huge Pistons fan, and a quick shout out to my parents, today's their anniversary, so happy anniversary to my mom and dad.
Nice.
But you know, it was sort of, you know, within the house, there weren't too many sports teams where my dad and I kind of sparred back and forth. we primarily had teams that we liked. You know, unfortunately, at that time, really the only successful franchise in Michigan, there were the Pistons for a short time and the Red Wings, but, you know, pro football was non-existent. That's with true. The Lions, and the Tigers were not very good. So it ended up being where, to my dad's chagrin, I liked the Bulls because of Michael Jordan, and he loved the Pistons. And, you know, the Bad Boys, you know, the documentary is awesome, you know, and kind of getting the perspective there. And then also, you know, the picture that then the Jordan documentary paints.
Well,
I mean, what a cool rivalry, you know, to have experienced, and really how dominating the Pistons truly were, and specifically to like Isaiah Thomas, how successful he was in head-to-head matchups with the Bulls. That's, you know, that's postseason and that's regular season too. So I love that there's still no love lost between, you know, both sets of guys. Yeah. But also what's so strange is the carryover between, you know, players that played on the Bad Boy Pistons and then ultimately played with Jordan, you know, with the Bulls is just pretty funny.
The Dennis Rodman, when he came over and they said, how did Rodman fit in? And Scottie Pippen said, like a glove, you know, which is amazing because he was, you know, he was the worm back in those late 80s, early 90s days when those teams were going head-to-head in the playoffs. And just watching the Bad Boys thing itself, it's funny because of Lambeer's Notre Dame connection and all, but Bill Lambeer is still the guy that I probably can't stand the most from those teams.
I think that was probably par for the course. He certainly was an instigator.
Yeah, no, he doesn't care who likes him. And he still has a lot of the, you know, a lot of the other guys have sort of softened over time, but Bill Lambeer basically doesn't like anybody still, it seems like. So it's funny. What did you think about the whole, the not shaking hands? That was one of the big controversies that came out of last weekend, the Isaiah Thomas and all that. Because I'll just tell you now, I look at Isaiah Thomas and I hear some of his comments, and he was on ESPN earlier this week talking about it, and he says he feels remorse, but to me, I think the only reason Isaiah feels any remorse for the not shaking hands thing is essentially because he got left off the Dream Team in 92. If that doesn't happen, I don't think he really cares. I don't think he would be apologetic at all. I don't think he would, you know, feel sorry for it at all myself.
I don't know. You know, when you watch the Bad Boy documentary, I think you'd like it because you're kind of like invested and bought in, like, okay, I'm a Bad Boy Piston, right? And then you watch the Jordan documentary and you kind of get that side of it. You know, personally, I think, you know, that was what Isaiah and his team wanted to do. I don't know if I 100% like it or agree with it. But I think too, it's like, you know, he was kind of joking around, you know, everybody now after the game goes up, you know, shake hand, great job, way to go, you know.
Yeah.
These were bitter rivals.
Yeah.
So I think I understand it from both sides. I understand that, you know, it was a moment where the torch was passed, and you have an opportunity to congratulate a team that you really had owned. But at the same time, I mean, isn't rivalry what makes sports great? And I think some
absolutely
of it, you know, I think some of it is missed, you know, in kind of the current stage right now.
I do. I miss some of this real guys not liking each other when they're out on the floor.
Which know? I know we're supposed to, you know, it's supposed to, we're supposed to preach sportsmanship and I don't know. I like, you know, I grew up Michigan, Ohio State, and that was when Michigan actually won a few games.
Yeah.
right. So you can imagine how much, you know, bad blood there was between Michigan and Ohio when, you know, you could ruin a team's season because one team might be rated number one and the other team number five, and ruin a season from year to year. So
yeah,
I love that. And that's why I think that, you know, I'm okay with, you know, with Jordan still being upset. And I'm okay if Isaiah wants to say, listen, that's what we did. That was our move. You know,
right.
We didn't want to show that. That's okay.
Well, and just to clarify what I'm saying about missing guys not liking each other when they played, I'm not saying that I would advocate them walking off the court. And Isaiah does fairly also bring up the Celtics walking off the court
right
the year before, and that comes up with the Bad Boys as well. But yeah, so my bigger point is when it's between the lines, you know, I do miss, you know, where you saw a lot more intensity. But once it's over, I do agree that you should have sportsmanship. You know, you do whatever it takes between the lines while the game is going on, and you shake hands when it's all over with. But you bring up an interesting point about sort of the way things are portrayed, and I didn't really think about it until you were talking about it, but Ken Burns, the famous documentarian, is criticizing this because Michael Jordan's production company is part of the contract, the project, and he says that there's a conflict of interest and that it essentially should be more journalism. He says, quote, "That's not the way you do good journalism, and it's certainly not the way you do good history, my business, end quote. Again, that's from Ken Burns. He's made all kinds of stuff, including the baseball documentary, the series and everything. And I guess there's something to be said for that, although this is sports and it's not like you're telling the story about what happened with OJ and whether or not a crime was committed and that kind of stuff. I think that anytime you're telling these kind of things, you have to have the involvement of the people who were a part of it. And just like that handshake thing in the 30 for 30 Bad Boys, it's sort of told one way. It's told from the Detroit Pistons perspective. And then now when we get to the lack of handshake with the Bulls and Detroit, you have Isaiah Thomas's opinion still, but it definitely does skew more toward the Michael Jordan perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of view Ken Burns like Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino right now. Like, get off my lawn.
Yeah,
you
come
know?
On, old man.
So, I mean, and the ratings don't lie, you know. So, obviously, this is a popular documentary. And I think that there certainly is going to be some bias in it. But it's Jordan's documentary. You know, it's the rights are, you know, within all the filming was there. So
it wouldn't have been made if he didn't agree to do it.
Exactly. And I would
sign off.
And I would want to have some type of final cut too. But I think that they're still doing a pretty good job of getting both sides, but it is about the Bulls. So, you know, they're going to portray what they want to portray, but there's also some things in there too, you know, that we cited some, you know, some drug use. You know, that was one of the things, and one of the younger players at the time as a big partier, and him saying, hey, don't say this on film, like, yeah, you know, there's still, right. I think, they're still getting some of those things, and it's hard to censor a guy like Dennis Rodman either, so, you know, however it's going to be biased, it may be a little bit, but for me, it really is, it's who, you know, who cares? I mean, we're getting access to something that we wouldn't have had if it wasn't, you know, for Michael Jordan's production company.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it has been very entertaining so far. It's been pretty informative. Just like I didn't realize the transition from Doug Collins to Phil Jackson. I had always sort of wondered how that went down, because even, you know, being alive and conscious of some of that stuff going on, I didn't understand exactly how it happened, and the fact that it had to do with Phil Jackson and Tex Winter being on the staff, and Jerry Krause wanted him to use the triangle offense. Doug Collins wanted to kind of keep the ball in Jordan's hands more. He and Jordan got along, but ultimately making that switch was a big part of how the Bulls made their progress and ended up going on that championship run. I thought that was interesting. And you mentioned the Rodman stuff. 48-hour pass to Vegas in the middle of the season. Could you ever see a coach doing anything like that today?
Well, you know, Donovan Mitchell, the Jazz, he said that Rodman invented load management.
There you go.
And this, you know, this was it. I'm so impressed with Phil Jackson, you know, with this. He understood his players, maybe more so than some coaches did at that time. But you're seeing, I think, his style taking over more, you know, similar to Greg Popovich, Steve Kerr being another one too, where, you know, if a player comes in and he says this is what he needs, I still can't believe he granted it to him, you know. It's still unbelievable. But, you know, to his credit, he understood what was kind of, you know, what made Rodman tick and what he needed, and knew how to get the best of him. And some of the great, you know, the great quotes and kind of, you know, what Jackson is saying is, when Rodman was on the court, though, you were going to get everything out of him.
Yeah.
You might not know what you're going to be getting, you know, once he leaves the facility. But when he was on the floor, you know, he gave it all. So what a crazy story. And I saw a follow up, too. I guess Jordan actually didn't go to Vegas to get him. the 48 hours extended further.
Right.
But he came back to Chicago, and Jordan had to go get him in Chicago because he hadn't reported in what?
Really?
Almost 72. Yeah, okay. It wasn't to Vegas, I don't believe. I think someone fact-checked that and wrote an article where they said he actually did come back to Chicago.
But he did go to his hotel room.
Right. He extended his stay in Chicago, or his vacation in Chicago. So he went from Vegas and then continued vacationing in Chicago.
Still had Carmen Electra with him.
Yeah, right.
And then to me, you know, kind of to what you're talking about is you might not know what you're going to get from Rodman off the floor, but the whole story about that first practice back when Phil Jackson wants to get Rodman back in shape, only it's, even though it's only been like 3 or 4 days, I don't know how much shape you're going to lose, but still they do what they call the Indian runs, where it's like the pursuit thing where the guy's getting the line and the guy at the back of the line has to run to the front. And so Jordan and the rest of the team said, hey, we're going to jog at a real slow pace. But then Rodman runs to the front, so you've got to follow the lead of the guy at the front of the pack. And he's, like, taking off on a dead sprint. He's the one that they're supposedly conditioning for, and he's outrunning everybody out there on his first day back from this.
I got to think that Rodman, you know, he doesn't know anything but full go.
Yeah.
Mike Golic Jr. On Twitter was he was describing him as a guy who plays on special teams on kickoff. The L4 who just, you're supposed to run down with reckless abandon and like basically break up whatever blocking scheme. That's Rodman. Like, he's going to run through whatever wall you set up for him.
That's a good analogy. Yeah, that's a great one. And I guess I just should say, because I didn't think about this Sunday watching this, just the way that Phil Jackson was able to handle all these different personalities and everything. But again, rewatching part of that Bad Boys last night, you could obviously see a lot of that with Chuck Daly as well. And I don't know that he always necessarily got credit for that, considering the reputation of that team. But I think you could see there were some parallels there between Jackson and Daly and the way they handled some of those personalities. So, all right, it is 26 after right now. Again, parts 5 and 6 of The Last Dance coming up Sunday. We'll get another glimpse on ESPN. And on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat tonight, we've got Dave Jude, who was part of the coverage, the media coverage of the Chicago Bulls back in those days in the late 80s. So we'll get some of his perspective as someone who was able to live part of that. Coming up next, NCAA with some decisions to make this week. One-time transfer rule, name, image, and likeness. Those were both discussed. We will talk about that as well as some of that stuff regarding Notre Dame players Cole Kmet to the Bears in the NFL draft. That is still to come. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, presented by Bud Light Seltzer, light and refreshing in mango, strawberry, lemon lime, and black cherry. Just 100 calories, 2 grams of carbs, and less than a gram of sugar. It's Bud Light Seltzer. And this is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley continues on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We're presented by Bud Light Seltzer in mango, strawberry, lemon, lime, and black cherry with former Notre Dame quarterback and baseball player Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers. As we continue today, we'll have some talk about Cole Kmet and what happened with him in the draft and some of the backlash that he got coming up in a little bit. But Evan, the NCAA relatively busy this week with a couple of different things, and this first one sort of really, they both snuck up on me. I didn't really realize that they were going to be addressing it at this point, but the one-time transfer rule is not going to be adopted this year. There were a lot of people who thought that this might get pushed through this year, especially in the wake of everything that's going on with COVID-19 right now. And it's been a while since we've talked about this. Where were you generally on the one-time transfer
rule? I was all in on it, and okay. I'm kind of surprised. You know, maybe because we stopped talking about it, so did the NCAA, and they're like, oh, these guys won't pay attention. Yeah, I thought it was going to get pushed through. There was a lot of steam. You know, I think there was a lot of publicity about it too, and it seemed like all signs pointed to that, you know, the main sports were going to move to, because there are already some sports that do allow it. And I think that
at least if I would have voted when we started first starting to talk about it, I thought that there'd be it would be adopted for all sports across the board, but apparently that's not the case, at least not right now.
When your sport, one of your sports, baseball, I'm trying to remember, I think when you came to school, they probably still had a one-time transfer for baseball. Is that right? Did the no transfer, you know, city year, did it happen while you were at Notre Dame still?
You know, I don't recall. It may have been close. You know, the big thing that was starting to take off were grad transfers around my time, where there wasn't a lot of precedent. There were, you know, a few guys that had done it. That was something that was just kind of starting. I'm not sure about the one, the no sit out for baseball. I'd have to check on when that date was.
You were a teammate of Matt Wegler's, right?
Yes, I was.
Because he was a grad transfer guy.
I was. So it would have overlapped then during my time there where it would have stopped.
Okay. All right. Well, new Notre Dame baseball coach Link Jarrett was with us recently on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, and I asked him what he thought about the idea of the one-time transfer rule, what his thoughts were before this pandemic happened, and if the pandemic has at all changed his thoughts on this one-time transfer rule. And so here is what Notre Dame baseball coach Link Jarrett had to say about that.
You know, I've been on these committees. Like, I was one of the 16 coaches last year on some of these panels. Obviously, when you ask me a question, I'm going to give you a little deeper answer than you might want, but we've got plenty
of time. Fine.
I can walk into the student. I guess when we're trying to make an attempt to slow recruiting down in all of college athletics, I keep hearing we need to slow it down. We shouldn't have 8th and 9th graders committing. I agree. I 100% agree. So if that's how we feel, opening it up for people to freely transfer doesn't correspond to trying to slow the process down, because if I make a decision on a player and that player makes a decision to come to Notre Dame or wherever the guy's coming, you know you have a bailout mechanism. So I think we're incorrectly applying that if we're trying to slow down recruiting. If we're trying to allow people to make better decisions on where they go and coaches make a little bit more of a deep dive into the player and how he fits and all of the things that we look for in recruiting, like, are we really going to then say if it doesn't work out, just go wherever you want? So I disagree with it, and sometimes we flip-flop on our rules. You know, there were years ago when you could transfer, and then we took that away, and now we're going to put it back in as we also try to put in mechanisms to slow recruiting down. So I disagree. This situation right now, if you wanted to allow kids to transfer right now because of the rosters, like this year is different as a rule, and to put that in as a rule going forward, I don't agree with it. That doesn't mean that it won't pass, but I feel like if we're trying to slow the process down for 8th and 9th graders, then we shouldn't allow them to make a decision knowing they can transfer freely at any time. I think it's a conflict of beliefs.
All right, so again, that is Notre Dame baseball coach Link Jarrett. We asked him his thoughts on the one-time transfer prior to this happening, and it was just yesterday the NCAA decided it is not going to happen. So there was a lot there, obviously, Evan, and as Link Jarrett said, and as we found out, Darren and I getting the chance to talk to him a few times, he will give you an answer, and he will give you a very detailed answer, which he did right there. And I've never heard it referred to as slowing recruiting down, slowing the process down. So what did you think about that aspect of what he said?
Yeah,
first?
A lot to unpack. And I think, you know, this started to occur actually within collegiate softball a few years back, where it was actually the University of Florida offered a sixth grader. And then very, very, you know, shortly after that, the rules changed on contact. And locally here, you know, Aaron Koffel, from Bremen,
right,
who I work with, she committed before her freshman year. I believe it was the summer going into her freshman year, committed to Kentucky very early. But then the rule was changed. So most of the girls I work with now, they're waiting until their junior year, fall of junior year, until there's any contact or more freely moving contact, right? You can go to a camp on campus and you can talk to the coaches there. You can reach out to them in certain modes. So that's what he's talking about as far as slowing it down, where you're not offering a kid who's in seventh, eighth grade. You're not, you know, pounding down the door and sending mail or, you know, phone calls when they're that young. That's the portion of it that's slowing down. Of course, you know, where I find it curious is, and all coaches will have their opinions, but, you know, they're free to move without regard.
Right.
If a new job opens up or they wanna leave, you know, after a year or two. So that's the part that maybe I think from a player standpoint is, you know, it is a plan B. I thought he described that the right way, where, you know, there still is a bailout if maybe you choose the wrong place or it ends up being where the roster isn't favorable for you to play. You have the opportunity to go and not sit out a year. So I get that. I think I get where he's coming from. It'd be tough for me as a prospect or player, you know, to be recruited and then maybe he's gone in 2 years. And I know the NCAA has set up different rules as far as what they call hardship, which would be possibly a coach leaving. But there are even precedent where that's not always the case, where they allow players to transfer because of that. So, Sean, it gets so muddy, you know, when we talk about these types of things. You're there's probably not a right choice in it. I think what, you know, the NCAA wants to do or is looking at by trying to pass this is, you know, can we give – it's a one-time thing, right? It's not that you're going to be transferring every year.
Yeah.
You know, it's I didn't get this right or it doesn't look right. And in today's atmosphere with the transfer portal – we know that players leave all the time.
Right.
And some get to play right away,
some don't.
Yeah, it's becoming much more commonplace. So, and that's the other part of it, and I'm glad you said that. You know, it might be a flip of the coin. You know, Sean, you might transfer and be immediately eligible, and then, you know, Evan, he transfers, and it's no, you have to sit out a year based on whatever the NCAA deems as, you know, necessary to move school. So, I'm for it because I think it would standardize the process, and it would, as long as they do it the right way, it would be less of a 50-50 chance. You know, here's your one shot. Go for it. If it works, okay. If you're going to try to transfer again, then you are going to have to sit out a year. But the clock is ticking on your eligibility.
Right. And that's one thing that Link Jarrett said there at the end, was that even though he didn't like it overall, he would have been okay with it for this year because of everything that's going on with COVID-19 and all this extra eligibility and everything. And I mean, he's a coach, so he's got a lot deeper perspective on it. But just from the outside looking in, I would think that would almost make things even more complicated, just because there is so much uncertainty with everything going on. If you just opened it up 1 year and then you didn't have it in general afterwards. But I don't know. The NCAA's Board of Governors also this week decided they are moving forward with a plan to let student athletes cash in on their name, image, and likeness from third parties. So in other words, no payments coming from schools, but the student athletes can go out and make a buck on their own name. Some examples of where this is permittable: it allows them to use social media channels as well as businesses and personal appearances to make money. Student athletes can identify themselves by sport and school, but they are not allowed to use either the school or their conference's logos in promoting themselves. And also, at no point should a school pay student athletes for their name, image, and likeness activity. So what do you think, Evan? Do you like this?
So imagine the Dark Knight and the Joker here saying, "And here we go."
Yes,
it's starting. Yeah, it's starting. I mean, it's gonna be so crazy. You know. I think YouTube channels and you know, being the presence these players have. I mean, you go and you look up Ian Book, say, on his Instagram. You know, he's probably got 50,000. He might even have more than that. I don't know. Followers of people there that. Now, if I'm seeing this past and I'm a businessman or have aspirations of, you know, providing for myself or my family, I look at that as I now have access to 50,000 or 100,000 people that are potential clients.
Yeah.
You know, can I start merchandising and you know, they're going to have to, do they hire a marketing firm? You know, do you have your buddies in the dorm with you that are in Mendoza, you know, College of Business as marketing majors, you know, run an account for you? I mean,
look what those guys did back the Catholics versus convicts. Look what they did. A bunch of students.
We wouldn't even have to make a documentary about it though, because it's all legal.
Totally above board.
So
the guy gets to stay on the basketball team.
it's do I like it? The simple answer is yes. The hardest thing is going to be controlling the student athletes now.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
How do you reel them in? These are 18 to 22 year old. You know, and if I remember myself at that age, you're a little bit, you know, you're hustling, you know, I mean,
that's right.
How can you make an extra buck? These are college kids.
Absolutely. I still think there's that there's always the law of unintended consequences. And that's what comes next after this. There's still a whole lot that is going to have to be reined in and, controlled and restricted.
But I will say this, you know, if some schools, and the schools can't pay, but right, if they're able to have a hand in this somehow and be successful with it, let's talk about college basketball. You know, you have so many players that are one and done so that they can start getting paid. You know, you may see more schools not have to buy into that, where they could set up some type of, you know, name and likeness and image package that's, you know, presentable, where you may be able to stay there for 3 years. It's right. Going to make financial sense to do that and still get an education.
Well,
you know, and I've seen a couple of schools. Nebraska was one of the first. They actually hired out to a third party firm, I believe, that was putting out content on how players could use their image and likeness to promote and make money.
There's a lot that's going to come with it, and it really will be interesting, because even though the schools are supposed to be, at least, you know, to a major extent, hands off with this, there's still going to be things that certain schools are going to do to try to set their players up, their recruits up for this kind of stuff when they're coming in the door.
I can't wait for the 30 for 30 in 10 years. That's going to be about how many schools the NCAA then ends up giving the death penalty because of this, because they didn't have it set up the right way.
Didn't follow it. Yep, exactly. He's Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. We will continue with more coming up next. I'm going to let Evan pick our next topic during our break, and then we'll come back and you'll find out with us exactly what that's going to be. We're presented by Bud Light Seltzer, light and refreshing with 4 fruit flavors, just 100 calories, 2 grams of carbs, and less than a gram of sugar. It's Bud Light Seltzer, and this is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean and Sharpley in the Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We're presented by Bud Light Seltzer. Want to remind you that today is the May Day for Michiana. We are doing a one-day fundraising effort, Midwest Family of South Bend, assisting the incredible needs in this time of uncertainty, the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. So due to the many reasons during the COVID-19 outbreak, a lot of people are struggling. Demands of the Food Bank of Northern Indiana are as great as ever before. You can help by going to feedindiana.org, making a donation. A $5 donation provides up to 20 meals, $10 provides up to 40, and $25 provides up to 100 meals. So you can go to WSBTradio.com for more information, or go to feedindiana.org to make your donation today. With former Notre Dame quarterback and baseball player Evan Sharpley, I'm Sean Stiers. As we continue, we've got a couple different topics that we want to hit here at the end, including what could be happening with Major League Baseball this summer. But of course, Evan, 6 former Notre Dame football players selected in the draft last week, starting with Cole Kmet, went number 43 overall in the second round. A little bit of controversy with Kmet going to the Bears with that draft. Bart Scott, former Jets general manager Mike Tannenbaum, were part of ESPN Radio's draft coverage here on WSBT last week. So first we'll let you hear what they had to say. You'll hear from Bart Scott first, and then Mike Tannenbaum with differing opinions of the Komet selection to the Bears.
I mean, you want to talk about being able to dominate and be easy, friendly throws with that catch radius and that, you know, demeanor, being able to be almost a extra tackle. A lot of people have been comparing him to Gronk. It's not about that he's going to run away from you. It's that what are you going to do when he puts you on his back hip and he's able to catch over you and you trying to have some of these smaller safeties trying to bring him down. You know, he's going to have to avoid getting chopped down early on. But, I mean, this is a great pick for, you know, what you want to do in Chicago and helping out those young quarterbacks, whoever's going to be that quarterback.
I think this is a shockingly poor pick. They have 8 million tight ends, and they have so many other needs. This blows me away. This is the worst pick of the draft. This may be the worst pick in the last. Are you kidding me? They overpaid Jimmy Graham, right?
That's
they overdrafted Adam Shaheen. And of all the other things they need to do, why, with their first pick, are they adding a guy that can't run? This is mind-boggling to me. What does this solve?
Because Bart, he had eight saves at Notre Dame on the mound 2 years ago? Is that why? I'm not sure.
Darn, I'm with you, man. Hey, Bart, man. Was it like this when you guys were the Jets together where, I mean, he hated your C.D. Lamb, like, best pick round. Now you're glowing about Cole Kmet and Tannenbaum comes. Your former GM comes back at you saying this is the worst pick so far of the draft.
Because he's going to allow Jimmy Graham to go out and be what Jimmy Graham is, and that's like a glorified receiver and be a matchup nightmare. When you look out, you know, some of the toughest teams we had to deal with was that, you know, that 22-pack personnel, that Tiger personnel. When you have two tight ends out there and you go small, he can be that extra tackle for you and let Jimmy Graham be able to work down the field and try and get open.
But, yeah, Bart, you know this from a defensive standpoint. Like, when you know that Kmet's on the field, you're not even accounting for him in the passing game. So he's really like another offensive lineman, and I get it. He can help capture the edge. But for this offense where they want to do so many speed sweeps and so many things behind the line of scrimmage, I think he's a poor fit. They put a lot of assets at this position. Some have worked, some have not. Trey Burton, they cut. This confounds me with all the other needs that they have. This is like the last
the
thing
worst.
I thought is that they would have. The worst. But when I had their top three knees come into this as corner, safety, and an interior offensive lineman, I didn't even have this on their radar. I just, when you look at all the other needs that they have on this team, tight end would be like ninth out of eight. It makes
just
no sense to me whatsoever.
So again, there's Mike Tannenbaum, the most critical. You don't have to account for Cole Kmet in the passing game, according to Mike Tannenbaum, Evan Sharpley.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, where he started was, it, you know, it made sense in him saying that they have too many tight ends. You know, they certainly have a tight end. So from a need standpoint, you know, I think I understand it. But then to go as far as he did and say then that not only do they not need him, but doesn't think that he's a quality football player might have been a little bit too much. You know, he's going to be able to, and he has, you know, at Notre Dame. I'd be interested, you know, how this ends up working in this system. To Tannenbaum's, you know, credit, I think he brought up some valid points on what exactly the Bears want to do. So strange maybe, but you know, for Kmet, it's gotta be pretty cool to be staying at home and be playing for, Chicago. But, you know, time will tell whether it's a cold take or, man, it's scorching hot because he came in firing.
No, and I mean, he mentioned that cornerback being one of their next needs. And if you look at their next pick was Jalen Johnson out of Utah. And so if you look at those second round picks for the Bears, they got two guys who were both evaluated as borderline first round guys in Kmet and Johnson with those second round picks. So I don't think, maybe you can say that Kmet was a little bit of a reach. I did think that the Bears would address, that maybe Kmet had a chance to go to the Bears, but I thought it would be with that pick where they ended up getting Johnson, their second pick. I thought maybe they would address something else first, but obviously they see something that they are specifically trying to accomplish with Cole Kmet. And it's not like Jimmy Graham is going to be around for a long time.
He's right, approaching
the end of his career. And as Brian Kelly said, it's one thing to have 10 tight ends. It's another thing to have Cole Kmet. Because a lot of these tight ends that he's talking about on the roster now are all going to be cut, and they're going to be looking for other jobs because of the fact that they have Graham and Kmet.
That sure was nice of Coach Kelly there, huh?
Yeah, it was. Wasn't it? All right, which of Notre Dame's draftees do you think makes the biggest impact in his rookie season?
I've got Claypool and Gilman down. I think both are going to see the field early on special teams, and you know, if you're making plays there, there's an opportunity then to get on the field, you know, as a starter in on offense or defense or in a special package. So those are my two, I think, as an early impact.
Yeah, I've got Claypool at the top as well because of what you're talking about, the fact that he'll not only play offense, but he will see special teams. And I did a list of, we ranked them in order, and I have Gilman in my top five as well because of the fact that he's going to be, I think he'll have a lot of special teams opportunities as a rookie. Okay, just a few minutes here. Bob Nightingale from USA Today had a story this week that Major League Baseball officials are considering a plan that would be three divisions, 10 teams in each division, and teams would be playing in their home cities to start things off. So you would have a drastic realignment for this season of three divisions, and they would be clustered geographically, where you'd have Yankees and Mets, Red Sox, Washington, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Toronto, Tampa Bay, Toronto and Miami in the East, and then the Central Division, both Chicago teams, Milwaukee, St. Louis, Kansas City, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Minnesota, Atlanta, and Detroit, for example, in the Central. So just some of your ideas on that, Evan, and your thoughts on that. We've got a couple minutes to go. Thoughts on that and any obstacles you see?
Well, as long as they have the robots ready to go as home plate umpires, you know, they can set this up however they want, just to make sure that the strike zone is how it should be. I mean, you know, as we've talked each week, you know, it's kind of been a new idea presented. So they want to get this right and they want to do it, but certainly are still being cautious. I don't know. I mean, I think it would work. You know, we originally had talked about doing it at spring training sites and that being a possibility, but now they're talking about, you know, doing more home ballparks, but there's still going to be travel. There's still going to be the concept of coming into contact with a lot of different people that you previously wouldn't have over the last few months. So, you know, I don't know. I think they do right now. Am I going to say it's a good idea? Yeah, I mean, I think it could work. And the conversations likely are going to continue to be ongoing until something sticks, and I guess you test it and see if it works. But you certainly don't want to be wrong and something happens. So that's why I know, you know, the powers that be are working through this. You know, what came to mind, though, for me, I'm most concerned about the major league or the minor league players. You know, those are the guys I think about.
Exactly. All right, well, we will have to end on that. For Evan Sharpley, our studio producer, Jess Hollis, Sean Stiers, Leprechaun Lunch presented by Bud Light Seltzer, 96.1 WSBT South Bend.